is the Capital City Recap with Michael Cohen on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Tuesday, and I'm on the air here, 1320 WILS. Great to have you here on this Tuesday. It is currently 65, a low 54 tonight. Tomorrow, rain, high of 70, a low 55. And Thursday, more rain, high of 67. It's going to be rainy. Get ready for that. A lot of reaction to the Manchester attack. Let's talk to a woman who's been talking about jihad for a long time now. Raheel Raza with us. She's with the Clarion Project, and she is the president of the Council for Muslims Facing Tomorrow, author of the book Their Jihad, Not My Jihad. Raheel, thank you for joining us on WILS.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, where are you from originally, Raheel?
I was born in Pakistan. I am now a proud Canadian. I've lived here for 30 years.
Yeah. When these attacks happen, what do you think when you see one after another like these?
Well, it's just a constant stream. I mean, of course, this one was particularly horrific and hit close to the heart because I'm a mother and a grandmother. And the fact that 12 children under the age of 16 were among the casualties is something that is incomprehensible and unacceptable. So, you know, it resonates very deeply. However, to say that I'm surprised is not true, because it's not new that the extremists, the terrorists, the jihadists have declared war on the West. Mm. And they have been attacking the West continuously.
Is there anything moderate Muslims like yourself can really do to help things out?
Yes, we need to speak out. We need to come together as a global community. What the world needs to understand that this is not a Muslim problem or not a Western problem. This is a problem that is global. Together, we have to deal with this. And as President Trump said to the 50 Muslim leaders when he was in Saudi Arabia, that, you know, this is a problem that emanates from within the House of Islam, and they need to take responsibility and they need to eliminate it. I mean, there was no political correctness. He made no bones about the fact that this is an Islamist ideology. It's mm-hmm. a jihadist ideology, and that they have to do something about
it. Yeah, and in this case, I should note the 22-year-old man, he was Salman Abedi. Immigrated from Libya. I mean, what do you think anyone in his neighborhood would have known that he might be up to something like this?
Well, nobody is born a terrorist. Someone actually helps them become a terrorist and helps them become radicalized. I am not of the belief that there is any such thing as a lone wolf attack. Every radical has been brainwashed somewhere, either on the internet or by someone. We have to find out where the hate, where the radicalization is coming from. Obviously, it must be somebody who has so much hate for humanity to be able to attack a public place where children are killed. Right. It's someone who has horrific intentions, and they have been brainwashed into this inhuman condition.
Right, we hear that authorities have a list of thousands of well, typically young men that they know are potentially could commit an act like this, right? But they haven't done it yet. So what should we do with these kinds of people that haven't done anything yet, but they might?
Well, you know, I don't have all the answers, but what I do know is that there needs to be a commission on radical Islamization, and people need to sit together, everyone, law enforcement, the justice system, the legal system, the police department, Muslims and non-Muslims, and they need to discuss strategies. And I always give the example that when Marxism and fascism and communism were alive, the global communities came together to fight it. Now it's Islamism, which is a political ideology. It cannot be fought with weapons. It's a war of ideas. It's about ideologies. So certainly leaders can sit together and talk about it. It's not just enough to say we are sorry. It's not just enough to say, because it's happening over and over again.
So how do you
time for action?
You've got a young guy who was born in England, right? I mean, this is his home country. How do you convince him to become unradicalized?
Well, the fact is that the hate and the brainwashing is coming from somewhere. What Muslim communities, the organizations, the mosques, the leadership has to do is stand up and say that armed jihad is no longer valid. These are people who think that they are jihadists. They think that they are fighting for a cause. They have to be told this is not a cause that they need to be involved in today. We need to condemn the ideologies that emanate from the Muslim Brotherhood, from the Salafis, from the Khomeinis.
In a typical mosque, Raheel Raza, by the way, way, here on WILS. Her book is Their Jihad, My Jihad. In a typical mosque.
No, their jihad, not my jihad.
Their jihad, not my jihad. That's a key distinction. Not my jihad. Yeah. In a typical mosque here in the U.S., is that message made clear, do you think, that this is the wrong way to go?
No, that is the problem, that these messages, very clear, unified messages from all the Muslim leaders to stand up together. If they were doing this, then the people would be listening. So it is not happening across the board.
Why? Why is it not?
Many of the mosques are influenced by money and the ideology of the same people who are funding the terrorists.
Okay.
So there was an article in the Washington Post many years ago that said that almost 80% of the mosques in America are funded and influenced by the Salafi Wahhabi. So when there is funding coming from outside into mosques and Islamist organizations, it comes with a subversive agenda. So the money needs to be traced.
Is that from Saudi Arabia, most of this money then?
I'm sorry?
Is it coming from Saudi Arabia, most of the money?
It's coming from different oil-rich countries. It's coming from Qatar. It's coming from Saudi Arabia. And so this needs to be tracked and it needs to be stopped because on the backs of these petrodollars come subversive agendas.
Mm.
And then, of course, all the Muslim leadership, the countries have to be put on notice, just like President Trump has done and said, clean up your act, clean up your house. This is emanating from within the House of Islam. Mm.
Raheel Raza with us. Where are you based yourself, Raheel?
I live in Toronto.
Okay. And what kind of Muslim community would you say exists in Toronto?
It's very, very, very. The Muslim communities are not a monolith. They're Muslims from almost 60 different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So there are progressive liberals, there are orthodox, conservative, many different kinds.
And are there mosques, would you say, in your town where you feel the message may not be clear on this issue of jihad?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and, there are.
Uh-huh. So is it kind of known in the community that some of these imams are encouraging jihad, that kind of thing?
Yes, it is known in the community, but the community is afraid to speak out because all this comes with death threats and fatwas, and people are afraid. They have families back home. So, not everybody can speak out. They're afraid to speak out. I mean, I myself have had fatwas and death threats, so certainly not everybody is ready to take on the challenge, but they have to. I don't think we have a choice. We are in a position of right now that if we don't take charge of the problem within our midst, we will face a very dark future.
Yeah. Well, you're in Canada. How much of an issue would you say radicalization is in Canada?
It's exactly the same as it is in America. North America is one group. So we have a problem. We've had attacks. We have had attacks that were thwarted, and there is radicalization.
Yeah. And do you think typically the families know exactly what's happening with their children?
Sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. I'm a mother of two sons. I'm a grandmother. If my children were becoming jihadists, I believe I would know because I'm involved in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say this for all parents. Sometimes they just send them to the mosques or the Islamist organizations and they don't follow up to see what they're being taught.
Okay.
And it's important that they should do this.
So is there a difference in becoming more pious than becoming a jihadist?
Well, being more pious is not necessarily being a jihadist. I'm a practicing, observant Muslim. I pray five times a day, and this doesn't mean that I'm a jihadist. It is the ideology. It is the kind of teaching, the kind of ideology that is being taught. If hate is being taught in a place of worship, then it has to be stopped. There's something very wrong about that.
So are they taught to be secretive about that, even with their own family? Or?
I'm sorry?
Are they taught, when they're going into this jihadist mode, are they taught to be secretive with their own family about what they're doing?
Yes, of course. The mercenaries who are training them, brainwashing them, try to work on those youth who are perhaps alienated from their families, who don't have a support system in their families. There are many young students who are alone, and they become fodder for the mercenaries who are preying on their minds, and they are told to be secretive. They are told to be silent, and in some very sad cases, the families were shocked to find out that their child was radicalized.
Mm-hmm. Why do we see this in Islam, and so we don't see it in Christianity and Judaism as much, really at all, this kind of philosophy?
Well, because this is a political ideology. It is, Islam is relatively a new religion. As you know, the Christian reform took 500 years. We are just at the beginning of trying to reform the way Muslims live their lives, the way they interpret and understand the teachings of the Quran, which can be very varied, and, bring themselves into the 21st century so that they can follow the UN Declaration of Human Rights and understand that it is very important to live and let live. We can't impose our ideology on someone else. It doesn't matter how one wants to practice their faith, as long as it's not being imposed on someone else, and as long as it's not a violent interpretation of their faith. Mm. What is happening is that there are leaders. I mean, most of the leaders of ISIS, people like al-Baghdadi, our friend Osama bin Laden, they were devout Muslims, and they used religion to invoke hatred among others. And religion, as you know, has been called the opium of the masses.
Yeah.
When you invoke religion, it can be a very powerful toxin.
Pulls them in. Now, you said that you yourself have been confronted with death threats. If you, within your community, try to anonymously report to authorities that, hey, I think there's a real problem here with this imam or this person, how safe would you feel being able to do that?
Oh, I have done it without being anonymous. When I know that there is a problem, I have reported people who have been promoting hate.
What do the authorities do when you, how effectively do they deal with that?
Well, it goes through a process. You know how difficult it is in these systems, in the police system. They're afraid that they don't want to get into people's faces. They tend to take it slow, but there have been times when we have reported, for example, the foreign funding of a certain organization, and it has been checked, and their charitable status was revoked. We are constantly exposing. So the mandate in our organization is the three E's: to expose the problem, to educate the masses, and then to eliminate the problem. So we have no qualms about exposing those who have hijacked and stolen our faith, because it's very important to me and the future of my children and grandchildren that the correct interpretation and understanding of Islam be there, and not the horrendously mutated version that ISIS and Al-Qaeda and the Taliban are promoting.
Okay.
So our narrative needs to be louder than the narrative of the extremists, but we are working at it. Okay. It's not something that's going to happen overnight.
When you say not overnight, how long do you think this problem is going to be with us then?
Well, it depends on how quickly the leadership wakes up. You have got the regressive left and the white liberal guilt who are not even willing to acknowledge that there is a problem. And this is like a virus. It's a disease. Unless you acknowledge that it exists and isolate it and then get rid of it, it's not going to happen.
Well, because on the left, we hear that this is an issue of we are misunderstanding these people, and that there's an issue of unemployment in these countries.
Yes, of course you hear that from the left, but these are apologists. They're deflecting from the real issue. And as I said, unless you identify the virus and isolate it, you can't treat it. You can ask any doctor this. They're not even being able to address the issue head on and call it what it is, a radical jihadist ideology, a global radical jihadist ideology. How are we going to find solutions? So we can't do this alone. We are just grassroots activists. It has to be done with the leadership, with the religious leadership, the political leadership.
One last thing, just a minute here, but you're a supporter of President Trump, but he, of course, famously said that Islam hates the West. Did that offend you personally?
No, it does not offend me personally, because he has come a long way since then. What he has said and done in Saudi Arabia is historic, and it is a precedent that has never been taken place before. So my support still stays. He has done a remarkable job of putting Muslim nations on the line and telling them exactly what he thinks without political correctness.
It's Raheel Raza. She's with the Clarion Project, president also of the Council for Muslims Facing Tomorrow. In her book titled Their Jihad, Not My Jihad, Raheel Raza. It's been insightful. Thank you, Raheel.
Thank you.